Good morning, Friendship. We are wrapping up our series, Love Is, and I hope that by now, if this is your first week, I'll kind of bring you up to speed, but I hope by now, as you've listened to it, you realize that love is something so much bigger than just a romantic thing between a man and a woman, between a husband and wife. We've been talking about the fact that love is such a bigger thing. It really connects with every part of our life and every part of our being. The first week, we talked about the fact of what is love. What is love, really? We talked about the fact that sometimes we look at the fact that love is an emotion. We believe that. But the reality is love is not a fleeting emotion. It's an active choice. It's something that we have to choose day in and day out. It has to be something that is intentional in our being to love someone or something else. And then we asked the question, you know, where does love come from? How does love start? And we looked at the answer, and it was the fact that all love starts with God's love. We love because God first loved us. God in his very nature is love, and so we are created in his image. Therefore, we have a desire to love. And so that's where it stems from. And then last week, we asked the question, who is it that we're supposed to love? And very, very clearly, God lays out in Scripture that through Jesus Christ, that the two most important commandments are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And the fact that we are to love God and love others, that is how God has laid out and intended for us to love. And those two things should be the priority. And we talked specifically last week how we are supposed to love others. And today, we're going to wrap it up with asking the question, what do you love most? What do you love most? Now, the reason that this is so important of a question to ask, especially for those of us that know Jesus Christ, that say that we're followers of Christ, is because whatever you love most becomes the determining factor of everything else in your life. Whatever you say is the most important for you, those things are really what drives you. And so you have to ask the question, you know, where do I spend the majority of my time? How do I invest the majority of my energy? How do I spend my money? Where do I do those things? Because when you answer those questions, within that question, you will find the answer of what you love most. Because if you look at your checkbook and you look at your calendar and you look at your energy and where you invest it, that will be pointing like a big neon sign. This is what you love most, more than anything else. And as Christians, it's really, really important because, and I'm just going to give you the big idea right off the top. That way, those of you that are blank fillers can be so excited that the first blank is filled out way before we get into the actual, you know, meat of the message itself. The big idea is this. The object of our love becomes the God of our lives. The object of our love becomes the God of our lives. Now, I want you to notice that God is in small g. It's not talking about God the Father. It's not talking about God divine. It's talking about the role or the position of ultimate authority in your life. Whatever is the object of your love, that is what you give permission to tell you what to do and what not to do. Whatever is the object of your passion, whatever you spend and you move towards, you say, I want this more than anything else. Every decision you make will be based upon whether or not it moves you closer to that thing that you love most. And so what happens is everything else in your life becomes secondary. There's really nothing that you can love secondly, because love is really driven by one thing. And whatever that one thing is, everything else becomes second to it. Everything else falls short. And any of those things, if they conflict or keep you or become a barrier because between what you love most and this, then this actually becomes an enemy of what you love most. You can really only love one thing the most when you really think about it. And so what I want to do is I want to just begin in Matthew chapter 6, because it's very important to understand what we love most. And Jesus Christ is talking in Matthew chapter 6. And one of the reasons that we look at this is because whatever we love most becomes the biggest pursuit of our life. Whatever we love most, we will add and put all of our passion towards. It will guide every single decision that you make. It will determine the very course of what your life will be like. You see, you can only truly, fully love one thing. Everything else is secondary. Jesus says so much in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. It says, no one can serve two masters. Now, if you like to underline and highlight and that type of thing, let me just tell you, the first two words of this are very important. This is Jesus Christ talking. God the Son, he is perfect and sinless and holy. Not only does he never do anything wrong, he always does everything right. And he says, no one can serve two masters. Now you go, hang on a second. He doesn't say no one can't love two people. He doesn't say, listen, but here's the thing. The object of your love becomes the God of your life. That becomes your master. The thing that you will try to please, the thing that you will try to pursue, the thing that you will want more than everything else. And so Jesus is saying, so listen, let's just be real honest about it. No one, there's not a single person on the planet. Now I know immediately those of us that are human beings, which I'm pretty sure is all of us, immediately look for loopholes, don't we? If somebody says you can't do something, you're like, oh yeah? Let me show you. And we look for the loophole. Let me just tell you, there's no loophole here. Jesus doesn't say no one can serve two masters except unless you really work hard at it. He says no one can serve two masters. You cannot truly have two great loves of your life. You can only have one. There can only be one thing that you love most. And he says, listen, no one can serve two masters. And then he goes on to kind of explain it. He says, either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. Now, specifically, he's talking about money here. So he says, you cannot love both God and money. But it is applicable to everything in life. In fact, I want to take kind of the second analogy that he used. You either despise the one or be devoted to one. And here's what's really interesting. This is a really, really stupid example, but I think it will resonate with probably all of us, okay? The new year just started not too long ago. We're getting into the end of the second month, and I'm sure, as we talked about in the first series this year, you probably had some resolutions. Some of you probably had resolutions to lose weight or to eat healthier or something like that. I'm not going to ask you, because then you know the follow-up question would be, how you doing? And that's just embarrassing for all of us, so we're not going to go there. But you know, when you decide and you become devoted to losing weight, right? You're like, oh, I am going to lose weight. I am going to get rid of this extra pounds that came over New Year's and Christmas and Thanksgiving and then Easter before that. And you know, you just, I'm going to get rid of it. And I'm going to get rid of it. I'm going to do it. And then somebody walks in with a chocolate cake with vanilla ice cream and chocolate syrup. You're like, and you want it, right? But you have devoted yourself to losing weight. And so now the love that you had for the chocolate cake with chocolate syrup and vanilla ice cream, or maybe you're really like a chocoholic, and it's like chocolate ice cream with chocolate syrup and chocolate cake. And you're like, oh, and a glass of chocolate milk. Yeah, that is perfect. I mean, chocolate overload right there, you know? Immediately, the love that you had from that now becomes hate, because you're devoted to losing weight. And so you're like, oh, get that out of my face. I don't want it anywhere near me. I can't, because you don't want that to get in the way of what you're devoted to. Now, I know that's a stupid analogy. You're like, oh, that is dumb. But it fits, doesn't it? Think about it. If you have anything else in life that gets in the way of whatever your number one love is, it goes from something that you used to like to now you hate it because it's in the way of the thing that you love most. And so Jesus says, no one can serve two masters. It's impossible. You can only have one thing that you love the most, because the object of your love becomes the God, the master of your life. Now Jesus makes it very clear that it's not an either or proposition. You cannot serve two things. It's impossible. And then John, in 1 John, and we've been spending most of our time in 1 John during this series. John, just an amazing guy. He was originally one of the sons of thunder. I mean, he had a serious temper. He was one of the ones that said to Jesus, let's bring fire down from heaven on these people because they don't like you. And Jesus is like, okay, chill out, you know, have a seat. Time out on you, John. Sit down because you're a little wound up here. And this guy, because of his relationship with Jesus Christ and because of the transformation that's taken place in him, now is writing an entire book that's all about loving God and loving others. It's amazing the transformation that took place in his life because love is a choice, not an emotion. And so we've been spending time in that. So John breaks it down even further for us. He says, listen, if you really take it to the lowest common denominator, there are only two choices. There are only two possible things that you can love most. It can either be the world and all the things that it offers, or God. That's it. Because everything else outside of God fits underneath the category of the world and all the things that it offers. And so in 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17, John says this, do not love this world nor the things that it offers you. Notice, listen, don't buy into it. Don't be in love with all of the things that the world can offer you. And there is a lot of stuff out there. Just watch an hour TV program and pay attention to the commercials. Every commercial is trying to draw you to buy something that will make your life better or faster, make you thinner or taller, make you better looking. Spray this cologne on and women can't keep their hands off of you. You know, buy these Spanx and you'll look fantastic. I mean, whatever the case may be, it is all about like preying on you and trying to get you to believe into something else. It says, listen, don't buy into it. Do not love the world or the things that it offers you. For when you love the world, you do not have the love of the Father in you. No one can serve two masters. It's either God or the world and all the things that the world can offer. For the world only offers a craving for physical pleasure, a craving for everything that we see, and pride in our achievements and possessions. He says, listen, I'm going to narrow it down the world side to three things. There are three things that the world can offer. First of all, it's physical pleasure. The desires, the things that you want, how you feel about things. Then there's also the things that you can see. You know, the things that you drive past a car, and it is the most beautiful, gorgeous car that you've ever seen in your life, and immediately inside of you, something has changed. And for some reason, this guy or this gal that's driving this car that you love must be the most evil person in the world because they have that and you don't. And they don't deserve that, but you deserve that. I mean, they're probably a drug dealer. I mean, seriously, that's why they have that car. I mean, you make up these things, right? Because you want that and you can't have it. And so it's your eyes, how you feel, what you see. And then the last thing that he says, listen, there's this false pride that builds up inside of each and every one of us. We look at what we've done. We look at our achievements. We look at what we have, our possessions. And we look at that and we believe that that is more than enough for us. And then we look at that and that those things that we have, those achievements and those possessions begin to tell us that, hey, you can do this on your own. You don't need anyone else. You don't need someone to help you. You don't need someone to guide you. Do you know, honestly, when you break it down, this right here is one of the number one reasons why people get divorced. Because they believe that they can do it on their own. They can do it better than with the person. That person's holding them back. It's keeping them from being the person they're supposed to be. It's all this stuff. And there's this belief that begins to build up inside of us. And those are all the things that the world offers. None of them sound really fantastic, do they? Let's continue. He says, but these are not from the Father, but are from this world. And this world is fading away. They don't last. They're temporary. Along with everything that people crave. But anyone who does what pleases God will live forever. What I want to do is I just want to take those three things that Paul talked about, that John talked about, and I want to just unpack them a little bit. Because as much as we all say, we love God. We love Jesus Christ. For each of us, at least one of these areas is the area of temptation and struggle for us. Because we're all made differently. Now, I may talk about the cravings of the flesh, you know, the cravings of the pleasure, and you may go, eh, that's not it for me. But then we start talking about the cravings of the eyes and seeing what other people have and wanting it for yourself, and you go, ding, 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 that's me. Because we're all made differently. But I want to just really quickly work through these three things because I think it's important. Because when we work through those things, I think we're going to see where it is and what it is that we've put ahead of God in our lives. And because we pursue that more than anything else, that particular thing has become the God of our life instead of the God who's made us. The first thing is that when we love the world, we become captivated by how it feels. When we love the world, we become captivated by how it feels. If you go online and you just type the word addiction into Google or Yahoo or Bing or whatever it is you use, thousands and thousands and thousands of pages are going to come up of all sorts of different addictions that people have. Do you know that the root of all addictions is this right here? How you feel. You see, because when you become captivated by how you feel, your feelings drive your decision making. They go, no, it's not that. Listen, let's just work it through. Let's just deal with the most simple. We love food, okay? Let's be honest. We love us some good food. And some of us are what we call stress eaters, right? Anyone want? No, okay. We're stress eaters. If we feel, notice that word, if we feel stressed, we want to eat to alleviate that feeling. Some struggle with alcohol. We say, well, we just like the way that it makes us feel. Or we don't like the way that we're feeling, so we want to stop feeling altogether. And we're addicted to that. Then there's also the drugs, and there's also, sex, pornography, all these different things that are all based in feeling. And we say to ourselves, it's okay because it's just a feeling. It's just a feeling, but here's the problem. When we buy into the lie, when we buy into the belief that if we just get more of that feeling that it will finally satisfy, the truth is it won't, and it doesn't. And so we are held captive by how we feel. And we're driven to deeper things. We're looking for longer lasting feelings. And you'll try and you'll do anything. And then after the fact, you feel ashamed and stupid. You ever done something because you were upset? Or done something because you were irritated with somebody else? Or maybe you made a decision. Or maybe you dove into alcohol and you got drunk. Or maybe you dove into an entire chocolate cake by yourself and had Alka-Seltzer sitting standing by. And then afterwards, you look at yourself and you're like, I am such an idiot. I can't believe that I did that. Why did you do that? Because your feelings became the most important thing. They were your God. They were your God. You ever sit down and talk with somebody who has ruined their life because of some addiction of some kind? And you ask the question, how did you get there? And oftentimes they're like, I really don't know. I just did this and I did this and I did this and I did this and I did this. And all these choices were based upon how it made you feel. And you ended up someplace you never intended to be. It leads you to do and say things afterwards that you're ashamed of. And you know what's interesting as well is that if you are constantly trying to do and get something that's a deeper, longer lasting of feeling, it ends up desensitizing you to the beauty that's all around you. You ever met someone that's so desensitized to just even the simple beauties of life? A sunrise, a bird, a deer, It's really, really big that you can shoot and eat later. Sorry, I know, I just ruined it for a lot of you. Like, oh. But we get desensitized to the simple things in life that are beautiful and gorgeous that God made for us because we have dove so deep and are so captivated by the necessity to feel it more. We become captivated by how it feels. When we love the world, we also accept the lie of more. The lie of more. Now this is, man, just about every other commercial on TV is all about the lie of more. More, 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 more. I'm amazed. You know, people are like, well, I need to build another garage. Why? Because I can't hold all my stuff. Okay, maybe you've got a problem. Just saying. I mean, we think about all this stuff, and it's always more, 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 more. And the lie is this. If you get more, then you'll be satisfied. If you'll get one more, then you'll be happy. If you get one more, then everything will work out great. Everything will be the way that you want it to be. If you will just have one more kid, it'll all be better. If you'll just do one more thing, it'll all be better. If you just get one more job, it'll all be better. If you just get one more car, if you just trade in your car, if you just trade in your wife, or you trade in your husband, or you trade, it's always more. It's always more. But here's the thing. More never satisfies. In fact, what it does is it traps you into just an endless cycle of more. And it leaves you unsatisfied and unfulfilled because more is never enough. And at the end of more, you recognize just how empty you really are. It's the lie of more. When we love the world, we become captivated by how it feels. And maybe you go, yeah, that's me. I recognize that. Or maybe you are the person that has accepted the lie of more, that you have to have more. And now, let me just say, don't look at this and go, well, I'm not an addict. That doesn't mean that you have not bought in and become captivated by how it feels. You go, well, I don't have a lot of stuff. That doesn't mean you don't want more stuff. I always chuckle because people go, oh, it's only the rich people that struggle with coveting. Really? I think they just go out and buy what they want. So I don't think they're coveting. I think they get it. It's those of us that can't get everything that we want that struggle with it, quite frankly, right? Because we're like, man, I would really like that. Oh, he's evil. There's some, you know, because we think that way. That's the way our minds work. Accepted the lie of more, but the last one is when we love the world, we tend to live like this life is all there is. We live like this life is all there is. We look at what we have, we look at what we've done, we look at the relationships that are currently around us, and we say to ourselves, this is what it's all about. We don't think about consequences that extend past this life. We believe that everything we know is everything that there is to know. We never stop and ask the question, is there something else out there? And because we never stop and do that, we tend to trust and place our faith in the experiences that we've had. We tend to place our faith and our trust in the things that we have, in the relationships that we have, and we go through life on a faulty foundation believing that that is going to be enough for us. But here's the problem. You ever had somebody you never thought would betray you? You ever had something that you believed was a sure thing not become a sure thing? You ever had a physical strength or ability that you had that immediately was taken from you with no understanding of why or how? You see, if we live like this life is all that there is and our understanding and our belief all falls in all of these things, then here's the problem. We are trusting in something that is untrustworthy. We are believing in a lie that can never be filled. And so we walk through life with a false sense of control. We believe we've got everything under control. It's all under control. No, It's not. Let's, in fact, just really quickly, for just a moment, to break the tension, look at the people around you and tell them, no, you don't have it under control. Just really quickly, just in a loving way, in a smile, just say no. If you know them and you love them, just smile and say, I love you. No, it's not under control. Because we have this false sense that we can control our life. The Bible says you have no idea what will even happen tomorrow. You have no idea what will happen in the next minute. We have no control. But we have this false sense of pride and this false sense of belief that we've got everything under control. And what happens is the longer we believe in that, it fools us into believing that we can do it all by ourselves. Those of you that have little kids, you've heard that before. Me do it all by myself. I got it all figured out. Don't, no, do not, listen, I know that I broke it, but I can fix it. No, you can't. You don't even know how you broke it in the first place. I mean, seriously. We have this false sense, and what happens is that we end up burning bridges in relationships. We end up pushing people away because we believe we've got this. When you love this world, you end up being trapped by your own desires. You are at the very whim of how you feel. When you love this world, you become into a reckless pursuit of things that will never satisfy because more is never enough. When you love this world, you believe that you've got all the answers. You believe that you know what the truth is because your foolish pride has convinced you that this is all there is. I want to go back and read 1 John 2. Verse 17. John said, these are not from the Father. This is not what God intended for you. God does not want you ashamed and empty, unfulfilled, uncertain, hopeless, lost and lonely. That is not God's plan, desire for your life at all. If as we've gone through these things, you look at them, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm kind of ruled by my feelings. I'm doing things based upon how it feels instead of what's right in the eyes of God. I literally am. I've been caught in the cycle, in the endless cycle of more. I've been bought up into that thing, and I believe that lie, and more is never going to be enough. Instead of believing that God is enough, I think more needs to be more. Or maybe you go, man, I have been living as if this life is all there is. I have believed with everything in me that I've got it covered, that it's under control, but it's not. John said, these are not from the Father. That's not what he has planned for you. But these are from the world. And this world is fading away along with everything that people crave. But anyone who does what pleases God will live forever. You see, when we love God, we are captivated by His presence. When we love God, we are filled with contentment and satisfaction, and all the while knowing that no matter what happens in this life, it's not all there is. We know the end of the story, and we know that Jesus Christ has paid the price. He's won the victory, and this world is just the pregame to the real deal. And he's got it all figured out.